presentation, I would like to talk about basically three big topics. At first, I would like to give you a very brief general introduction about CSR, so what is it, how to interpret it. Secondly, I will talk about the main political and legal milestones in the European Union, how the CSR policy was developing in the last couple of years. And finally, as Professor Kóta asked me, I will talk about the recent communication of the Commission, so I will talk about the actual concrete strategy of the Commission about CSR. So let's start with the first part with the introduction. So what is CSR? How can we interpret it? Of course, CSR, corporate social responsibility, is not originally a European concept. It is rather an Anglo-Saxon American idea, and it's relatively new in Europe and in the European Union especially. It's a very broad concept, of course. It has many different kind of interpretations, and on the other hand, it's a very timely and actual concept connected to globalization and sustainable development and to such big ideas. In Europe, we have many synonyms and translations for CSR. For example, we often associate this idea with business ethics or with the agenda of business and society, or if we are talking about law, we also can mention the agenda of business and human rights. And here we can see that although corporate social responsibility, CSR, is generally considered to be a voluntary concept, we have some legal elements in it, and I will try to concentrate in the comings on the legal elements especially. Of course, we can mention sustainability management or sustainable development in general, because on the macro political level, we have the concept of sustainable development. And CSR, the idea of CSR is very similar, but on the micro, on the corporate level. So the two ideas, sustainable development on the one hand and CSR on the other hand, are very closely interlinked to each other. And of course, we can use the term corporate citizenship, because now in the 21st century, we expect more from corporations than only to be a profit-making machine. We expect that they should be kind of global corporate citizens with rights and obligations on the other hand. And last but not least, we have the idea of corporate accountability. So we will see that CSR is also about legal liability and legal responsibility, not just about moral and ethical stuff. Okay, we have the official European definition of CSR here from 2001. It was the first green paper. I will come back to this green paper a little bit later. But here we can see the definition. So CSR describes a concept whereby companies integrate social and environmental concerns in their business operations and in their interaction with their stakeholders on a voluntary basis. From this definition, I would like to underline three or four important aspects. The first one, that CSR is an integrated concept. So we cannot talk about CSR just like a PR or a marketing activity, but CSR should be integrated in the strategic daily operation of a corporation, in the daily decision-making process of a corporation. So it cannot be an extra optional in way of doing business, but it should be embedded in real strategic way of doing business. Secondly, from this definition, I would like to point out that CSR is a multidimensional concept. So it has at least three dimensions. We can describe these three dimensions with the three letters of P. The first one, of course, the most important P is the profit, to make profit. Secondly, the planet, environmental and eco responsibility. And the third one, what is maybe most important for us, dealing with labor law, people, the human dimension of corporate social responsibility. And it has many more dimensions, but these are the most important ones. Surely, from this definition, I must talk about the most important aspect, voluntary. So CSR is basically a voluntary concept, as I have already said before. It is still true, but we will see in the most recent communication of the Commission that it is continuously changing, and even more and more legal elements, regulatory elements are coming to the agenda of CSR. So I will come back to this. And last but not least, we can mention that CSR is also about stakeholder management. It's not really the business of lawyers, but we also must mention that CSR is also about how enterprises are interacting with stakeholders, market actors, consumers, and of course here we have employees in the language of CSR, in the jargon of CSR, we call employees strategic stakeholders or insider stakeholders, so it's another formulation of the role of employees in a corporation. And finally, a last introductory slide about CSR. This is the most often referred to and most common definition, scientific definition of CSR. This is the famous CSR pyramid prepared by Archie Carroll. According to this definition, CSR basically consists of four levels of responsibility. The first one is economic responsibility. This is the baseline of the pyramid. And this is obligatory for all corporations, of course. So corporations are set up in societies to make profits and to make money, of course, it's very obvious. And but on the other hand, it's not that obvious that it is still enough, because former economists said that business of business is only business. But in the 21st century, it's maybe not true anymore. So we have other levels of responsibility as well. Secondly, we have legal responsibility, of course. That is the most important for us lawyers. Of course, in principle, legal responsibility is obligatory, but in practice, we know that there are many problems on this point. For example, for me, and I think not just for me, it's very cynical when a corporation has a very shiny and pretty CSR policy, for example, in sponsorship or in donations or in charity, but on the other hand, they are breaking fundamental labor rights or environmental regulations. So we must stress time after time in the science of CSR that legal compliance is a very important element of CSR, so we cannot deny it, because maybe for lawyers it sounds a little bit strange, but in the discussions of CSR, this legal compliance part of CSR is not that popular. So CSR experts are especially talking about ethical and moral responsibility, but we must stress and underline that legal compliance is a very important part of CSR as well. For example, in Japan, if they are talking about CSR, they are always talking about legal compliance. This is the most important part in Japan of CSR, but in Europe, that part was not so important so far. But on the other hand, we must say again that legal responsibility is not enough anymore. So maybe I'm also a little bit narrow-minded as a lawyer sometime, but we must leave behind this narrow-mindedness of a lawyer, because legal responsibility, we must say that it's not enough benchmark of social responsibility anymore. So we cannot say that a corporation or a firm who is complying with all the labor laws and environmental protection laws is socially responsible. So we need new benchmarks in the 21st century to describe social responsibility of a corporation. So we must go beyond a little bit legal responsibility as well. So we have the third level, ethical responsibility. It is not obligatory anymore, it's only expected from corporations. It means to do what is right, just, or fair, even in situations when there is no obligatory legal framework to do so. For example, the famous case of the Nike or other big multinational companies. Maybe it's not obligatory, legally speaking, to comply with basic human rights and labor rights in China or in other faraway countries in the developing world. Legally speaking, it's not obligatory, but now it is expected from big multinational corporations when they are doing business outside of the developed world. They also have to comply with fundamental labor rights and other human rights. And on the top of the pyramid, we have the philanthropic responsibility, which is only desired from corporations. It is also part of CSR, of course. Here we have donations, charity, sponsorship, and things like this. And the problem, in my opinion, that if we first hear the three letters of CSR, maybe we are only thinking about this dimension, this philanthropic responsibility, because in the media and in daily discussions, CSR is mainly concentrating on this philanthropic responsibility of corporations. But we must stress, and not I'm stressing, but Professor Carroll was stressing, that a corporation is really socially responsible when all these four dimensions are maximized at the same time. Okay, and now let's come to the global framework of CSR for a little, still a little introduction. In my opinion, and also not only my opinion, but according to the scientific literature of CSR, the biggest problem, the biggest dilemma in the age of globalization, that on the one hand, we of course have global societies, global markets, global economy, but as we all know, on the other hand, we don't have a global legal framework, we don't have global labor law as such. So the biggest dilemma, that in the age of globalization, it is not possible anymore to compel firms and corporations to a socially responsible way of behavior solely by way of legal force. So laws, classical command and control, national and international laws are not enough anymore to talk about social responsibility on the global level. So in other words, we can also say that there is a kind of governance gap, a governance vacuum on the global level, because there is no equal power on the global level to balance the real strong economic power of multinationals. And this is the biggest problem in terms of law. And we must stress that law is not enough. And besides law, we have many other basic preconditions for a corporation to be socially responsible. There are at least four basic preconditions of being socially responsible, besides legal regulation, as I said. For example, the first one is the so-called profit factor, or in other words, the business case of CSR, because we can see that all corporations are trying to find some kind of profit interest in being socially responsible. So they would like to make profit with being socially responsible, at least on the long run. So for example, if you are talking about the world of work, CSR is good for human resource management, because if I am socially responsible as a corporation, it can enhance the loyalty and motivation of employees. So companies can find the business interest, the business case in CSR, and this is one very important precondition of being socially responsible, maybe the most important one. Secondly, we must say that there is a need for so-called market-based incentives for corporations. If we are talking about market-based incentives, that's we are, the society. For example, we need conscious consumers who are caring about the background of a product. So for example, if we are buying a shoe, we must think about where it was made, for example in China or in other parts of the world. So we need conscious consumers, and of course, what is maybe even more important, we need socially responsible investors. SRI, it's another term in CSR. I won't talk about it because I don't have time, but it's a very important part of CSR. How can we include social and environmental criteria in the operation of investment funds? I don't know how it is in Germany, but in Hungary it's just starting. In Hungary we have some investment funds with social criteria, but in Europe it's a growing market, so in the coming years, it is sure that the SRI markets will be growing. And the third important criteria for being socially responsible is the civic, the social pressure. So CSR started maybe with this kind of pressure: NGOs, civil societies, human rights organizations. For example, as I said, the famous Nike case started with this, because some labor rights associations and foundations found out in the supply chains of Nike some labor breaches of some labor rights, and they publicized it on the internet, and that was a very big pressure on the big multinational company to be socially responsible. And last but not least, what is the most important for us, to be socially responsible, we need the public political support. We can say that this includes laws and regulations as well, but in the area of CSR, we are not talking basically about classical command and control regulation, but CSR is rather an arena of soft law, self-regulation, multi-stakeholder regulation. So we need kind of paradigm shift in legal thinking and legal policy making, and we will see this paradigm shift in the new European Commission strategy at the end of my presentation. Okay. So very quickly, still we have something at the international level. As I said, that there is a big governance gap on the international level, but still we have something at least. But we only have soft laws on the global and international level in terms of CSR. You can see here the most important international regulatory attempts or regulatory frameworks of CSR. They are very well known. I think the first one is the Tripartite Declaration of Principles concerning multinational enterprises and social policy from the ILO, and the similar guidelines for multinationals from the OECD. These are from the 70s, where multinational corporations started to really grow, but both the ILO declaration and the OECD guidelines have been amended since then many times, so they are still in force. Difficult to say that they are enforced because they are soft law, but they are still valid and they are still used by the two important international organizations. And on the UN level, we have many other initiatives in terms of CSR. We have the Global Compact from 2000, maybe this is the most well-known CSR framework, and we have a very recent one, a recent initiative from the UN. This is called the Protect, Respect and Remedy Framework from the UN Special Representative on Business and Human Rights. This is Professor John Raji, and in the last 7 or 8 years he has working closely with an exclusive team of human rights lawyers on the topic of business and human rights, and last year they published a very important report. This is called UNGP, the UN Guiding Principles on Business and Human Rights. And this is a very groundbreaking legal-like, of course it's still soft law, but it's a much more legal-like initiative than the former Global Compact, for example. So this is very important on the international level, and the new European strategy is also referring back to this UNGP guidelines, so it's very important and very new again. We have many others like GRI, the ISO, ISO standard for CSR, and many other international attempts. But we must stress again that these are non-binding in their nature. They are very ineffective. And if we are honest, we can say that they are not so much respected by the corporate world. So multinationals don't really care about these international initiatives. They are still operating in this global governance gap. And what is also very important in the field of CSR, that parallelly to this international attempts, regulatory attempts, which are coming from above, from international organizations, we have a different stream of regulation in CSR, and this is of course called self-regulation by multinationals. So to fill this governance gap in CSR, we have these two basic ways, regulation from above with soft law, and the regulation from below by self-regulation of multinationals. And I'm sure it is very well known that we have many private instruments and private techniques in CSR self-regulations. For example, we have management certification schemes, different kinds of rankings, surveys, awards for socially responsible companies, codes of conduct, different kind of charters, ethical charters, social audit schemes, social compliance scheme. All these things are voluntary, basically. But I will come back to this too in the new European strategy, the European Union is trying to bring some kind of coherence and some kind of systematical thinking into the arena of this private regulatory forms of CSR. So this is a very colorful word in CSR. We have many different initiatives, multi-stakeholder, global, national initiatives in terms of self-regulation. But as I said, the European Union is trying to find a common way for this private instrument. Of course, we have social labels, social reports. Maybe this is the most important thing, and here we will see that the most is to be expected from the legal field, because according to the European Commission, I will come back to this too, in the next 1 or 2 years, the European Union will come forward a legal proposal for mandatory and integrated social responsibility reporting for corporation. So as Mr. Dean said, there is a big link between different areas of law in CSR, because we are coming from social law and labor law in a broad sense, but in company law, according to the European Commission, there will be a mandatory and integrated obligation, of course, only for big companies to publish some kind of social and environmental reports on a regular basis. But we still don't know too much about these proposals, but the European Union is working on it. And we have, as I said before, the SRI market, socially responsible initiatives. Okay, and after this introduction, I'm coming to my second topic, and I will be quite short on this point, but I would like to talk a little bit about the main steps of the European policy in terms of CSR. So on the European level, CSR is very obvious that is at the top of the EU's political agenda now. And the question arises, why? So why it is so important for the European Union to have the CSR policy in the middle of the social dimension policies somewhere? We can read here some quotations from official EU documents. CSR mirrors the core values of the EU itself. And CSR matters to each and every European. That means that on the macro-political level, we have the well-known goals of the European Union to be a sustainable market economy or responsible competitiveness. And these goals are already in the treaty, in the European treaties. And as I said, it's very similar to the concept of sustainable development, which is also in the treaty now. On the corporate level, CSR is a very similar concept. Of course, it's not so well developed legally, but at the macro level, we have this European very broad goals of the further development of the European Union, and the European Union found this idea of CSR very well fitting into this broad concepts, because it is the same policy on the corporate level. So according to the European Union, CSR is not a policy in itself, so not just a separate policy field, but CSR is complementing all the existing policies and legal regulations, for example, in the field of labor law, environmental protection, consumer protection. So it is not against regulation, but supporting the existing legal framework. As I said, at the political and legal level at the European Union, CSR is quite a recent phenomenon. In 2000, the European Council formulated a special appeal to companies' corporate social responsibility. That was almost the first time in European policymaking to turn directly to the corporate world for some kind of ask for help from the corporate world. This appeal has been reiterated many times since then. For example, in 2005, in the midterm review of the Lisbon Strategy, it was said that CSR practices can play a key role in contributing to sustainable development by enhancing Europe's innovative potential and competitiveness. So we can see that it has become a very important and structural part of the European social dimension. Okay, before coming to the recent communication of the Commission, let me just mention three previous important documents from the European Union in terms of CSR. Of course, I haven't said before, but we still don't have anything concrete, legally speaking, at the European level, so we don't have regulations and so we don't have hard laws in European Union about CSR. We only have these communications and green papers and soft laws, but they are still very important. So the first one from this soft law product of the Commission was the green paper from 2001, and the green paper made a distinction between two fields of CSR, two aspects of CSR, the internal dimension and the external dimension of CSR. And as you can see, the internal dimension of CSR is consisting of the following main policies: human resource management, health and safety, adaptation to change, restructuring of employers, companies, and management of environmental impacts and natural resources. Here you can see that somehow the first elements are connected to labor law in a broad sense, and there are many concrete initiatives and steps, of course, in these areas, but we don't have time to go into details. And the external dimension is also very important in the green paper. Here we have the connection with local communities, how corporations are fitting in the local communities where they operate. Secondly, we have the relationship with business partners, suppliers, and subcontractors. So this is the field of responsible supply chain management, which also has some relevance to labor law. And the Commission is also planning some kind of concrete steps in the long run in terms of responsible supply chain management. How to enforce, for example, labor laws, minimum wage requirements in long supply and value chains. On the third level, we have from the external dimension human rights, global human rights, and we have these global environmental concerns, of course, the contribution to sustainable development and climate change and so on. Okay, that was the first important document from the Commission. Let me talk about very quickly from another initiative of the Commission from 2006. This was the second so-called CSR communication from 2006. And at that time, 2006, most of the CSR experts was waiting for something really groundbreaking from the Commission, because everyone was expecting at that time that the Commission will come forward with some concrete legal steps and legal proposals and legal initiatives in the field of CSR, because so far we only had this kind of, maybe it's rude to say that, but kind of cheap talk about CSR and the soft law instruments. But everyone was waiting that the Commission will come forward with some concrete legal steps. But in this sense, this communication was very disappointing, because also the circumstances of the drafting of the communication were quite interesting. Of course, it was not corruption or things like this, but it was very obvious that NGOs, trade unions were left out of the final stages of drafting this communication, while the Commission did involve some very important business representatives into the drafting of this communication. So maybe not only this, but maybe this is also a reason why this communication has become very much anti-regulatory. So there is no legal step in it, and the communication defined CSR as a purely voluntary exercise to be used as a competitive brandishing tool by corporations, and it clearly said that obligations, regulations would be counterproductive in this sense. So as I said, for lawyers, it was very disappointing to hear this, that the European Union is dealing with CSR very much, but does not plan to implement concrete legal steps, directives, or regulations in this area. The only concrete outcome of this communication from 2006 was the setting up of the European Alliance for CSR, which is a kind of political umbrella organization for CSR initiatives by companies. Of course, it's very important, but it's only about awareness raising, changing of best national and corporate practices of CSR, but it has nothing to do with concrete legal steps. Okay, I won't talk about the alliance in itself, but very quickly, some words about the last important product of the European Union, last important document of the European Union in terms of CSR before the new communication. This is the famous European Parliament resolution on CSR from 2007. And we can see this European Parliament resolution as a kind of antecedent, as a kind of antecedent of the current communication, because the Parliament in this resolution criticized very heavily the Commission communication from 2006. So it was a kind of reaction from the European Parliament to the European Commission's communication from 2006. We all know that in the European Union we always have this kind of box match between the Commission and the European Parliament, and it's very obvious in terms of CSR that the European Parliament is much more for the advancement and for the increasement of the legal regulatory side of CSR, while the Commission is very much committed about the voluntary nature of CSR, but we will see that now it is changing a bit. And the European Parliament said that there is a need to bridge this gap between voluntary and regulatory CSR, and we need to find new regulatory ways to go forward with the concept of CSR, and the European Parliament has come forward with some concrete, pragmatic regulatory steps. For example, the European Parliament suggested this kind of integrated and mandatory social and environmental reporting, which we will see that now it is becoming a real legal proposal. And another very important legal area of CSR is public procurement. Already in 2007, the European Parliament came forward with the proposal to include social clauses and social clauses in public procurement contracts, and the European framework of public procurement, the European directives on public procurement are already offering this possibility for state agencies to include some kind of social clauses into public procurement contracts. And on this point, much more is expected from the Commission and from the European Union now, because the European Union committed itself to improve the body of regulation in terms of public procurement, to offer even more possibility for state agencies to include social clauses into public procurement contracts. So this is one of the most important and most developing fields of CSR in terms of legal thinking. And of course, it's very important for labor lawyers as well, because this can be a new tool to enhance the compliance with labor laws. So of course, it is often said that in labor law we have a crisis in labor law with the compliance, but if we would find even more social and labor related clauses in public procurement contracts, according to many experts of labor law, it would be a very good and promising tool to enhance the compliance with labor laws in the long run. Okay, so after this baselines, in the following, I will talk about the new communication of the EU. So, the Commission, just some months ago, in October 2011, published this new policy on CSR. And at first, we must ask ourselves what are the reasons for the timeliness, for the actuality of this new communication, and we can explain the timeliness and the actuality of this new communication with two very important ambitions of the European Union. First, the European Commission sees CSR as a contribution to the European Union's treaty objectives of sustainable development and the highly competitive social market economy. So as I have already said before, what we have on the macro-political level, we must have something complementary on the micro-political, on the corporate level. Secondly, now we have, of course, the EU 2020 strategy, and the European Commission sees CSR as one of the most important tools to support the realization of the EU 2020 goals. I'm sure you all know something about the EU 2020 framework. It's about the smart, sustainable and inclusive growth policy of the European Union for the next 10 or 8 years. CSR is seen as a very important contribution and support for this policy. Why? Because according to the Commission, CSR is able to build long-term trust in markets, long-term trust in businesses, and on that way, it can be a very important helping hand or building block for sustainability, and it offers also new opportunities for growth. So this is the logical line of why CSR is so important now for the European Union. Of course, let me mention three other background ideas for explaining the importance of CSR in current times. The first one is, of course, the crisis, the economic crisis, because according to the Commission, CSR can play a role in mitigating the economic crisis and rebuilding trust in markets. So this is the first time ever in European policy making that the Commission said that businesses, especially big multinationals, have the responsibility to rebuild the trust after or still during the crisis. And this is a very important new part of CSR, that it's not just a voluntary thing, but big multinationals have to do something to compensate for the crisis. Secondly, it's also very important to stress that in most European countries, especially in my countries, you can hear in the news, but all in other European countries, there are big budgetary problems, budgetary cuts and austerity measures in government policies. And according to the European Commission, in times of budgetary cuts and in times of this austerity measures at national levels, of course, we can also mention Spain, Italy and other countries in Europe. But at times of these budgetary cuts and budgetary crisis, it is very important to increase the involvement and the inclusion of businesses into social policies. Of course, for us who are dealing with the labor and social security law, it sounds a very bit strange and sometimes a little bit dangerous. How much can we involve corporations and businesses into social policies? But according to the European Commission, it will be very important in the coming years to enhance and increase the level of involvement of the business sphere into social policies. And last but not least, the background idea of the new communication is to find a balance between short-term profit maximization on the one hand and long-term sustainable value creation on the other hand. Okay, I think I will skip this because we have already touched upon that CSR is not only beneficial for society and not only for us, but it is also offers some added values for corporations. Risk management, cost savings, human resource management strategies involve enhancing innovative capacity and so on. I won't go into details on that point. Rather, I would like to talk about the new definition and new approach of the European Commission towards CSR. Let me mention three important pillars of the new definition of CSR. The first one, that the new definition is building on the international CSR standards. Do you remember the ILO, OECD and other CSR standards? And the European Commission sees this international CSR standards as an authoritative guidance for the European CSR policy. Why it is so important? Because before, the European Union in 2006 said that the European Union wants to be a pole of excellence in terms of CSR. It is still true to some extent, but now the European Union sees its CSR position in an international framework, so it recognizes the self-evidently, naturally global nature of CSR. So we cannot have a narrow-minded European concept of CSR, because CSR by nature is a very global and international concept. Secondly, the new communication leaves behind the voluntary approach of the former communication from 2006, and as I have already mentioned many times before, the new communication increases the role of regulation in the field of CSR. It is very obvious and very clear that there is a need for more complementary regulations. So we are not talking about only about voluntary CSR, so we need regulatory steps in terms of CSR. And the last and third important pillar of the new definition as the multi-stakeholder approach to CSR, a balanced approach to CSR, because as I said before, the communication involved business representatives, and the Commission had a kind of biased and one-dimensional voluntary idea of CSR, which was of course a very business-friendly concept of CSR. But now it is a much more balanced and multi-stakeholder concept, because civil societies, social partners, trade unions were also involved in the drafting of this new strategy. And now we can recognize that also trade unions are supporting very much the new strategy of the Commission, because they are seeing that there are much more opportunity in this new communication to have legal steps forward and have a bigger pressure on multinationals. Okay, let's see the new definition. Let me quote the new definition. Maybe for the first time for us, for lawyers, this definition does not seem to be so promising or so groundbreaking, but if we compare this definition with the former one from 2006, it's very promising and very it has many potential. So the new definition is like this. What is CSR? CSR is the responsibility of enterprises for their impact on society, and what is even more important, to fully meet their social responsibility, enterprises should have in place, should have, this is the most important part, in place a process to integrate social, environmental, ethical, human rights concerns into their business operations and core strategy in close collaboration with their stakeholders. So what can we see now? As I said before, it's not completely voluntary anymore, but corporations and enterprises should have in place a process to integrate social and environmental concerns. Of course, it's still soft law, but much harder than the previous one. The other main cornerstones are also laid down in the new communication of this definition. For example, it is said that CSR is a matter of size. So CSR is basically for big companies. Of course, small and medium-sized enterprises also have to be socially responsible in some ways, but the Commission now is not trying to make artificial policies for small and medium-sized enterprises, because the classical techniques of CSR, codes, audits, reporting and things like that are basically for big multinationals, and the Commission sees the CSR role of small and medium-sized enterprises in the arena of informality, intuition and less regulation. So the real classical voluntary arena of CSR is now for small and medium-sized enterprises, and for the big ones, for big multinationals, we need something more than voluntary policies. CSR is a strategic concept, so it's about integrating CSR into the daily management of corporations. It is also stressed again that CSR is a multidimensional concept, social, ethical and things like that, as I have already said before. And what is something new in this communication, the importance of social dialogue. It is also stressed in this communication. Of course, for labor lawyers, it's very obvious the importance of social dialogue. But in terms of CSR, is something new, because as we have seen before, so far CSR was basically a unilateral decision of management and companies. But nowadays the Commission is changing its ideas and telling that social dialogue must play a key role in drafting corporate social responsibility strategies. And here we must mention the role of the sectoral social dialogue committees in the European Union on the one hand, and on the other hand, the very important role of transnational collective agreements and transnational collective bargaining. We have many new IFAs, international framework agreements with multinational companies, and these IFAs are also dealing with CSR standards somehow, and the European Commission sees this way of formulating CSR policies as the most promising one instead of unilateral codes of conduct, for example. Okay, and to close my speech, because I will leave some time for discussion as well, let's go through very quickly the concrete initiatives and the concrete action agenda for the period 2011 and 2014 according to the new strategy. So according to the new strategy, we have 8 basic aims, targets of CSR for the coming years. And in the framework of these 8 broad goals and targets, we have many concrete proposals, sometimes legal and sometimes not so legal proposals, but we have many concrete proposals for enhancing this CSR strategy. I will go through very quickly these 8 areas. The first goal is about enhancing the visibility of CSR and disseminating good practices of CSR in the European Union. And in the framework of this goal, we have 2 concrete initiatives put forward by the Commission. The first one is the creation of a European CSR award in this year, in 2012, because in national context, we have many different kinds of rankings, awards for socially responsible corporations. I don't know the details, but I've heard about that in Germany you have this kind of famous family-friendly employer prize, and many other aspects of social responsibility is ranked according to different kinds of criteria. And also in other countries we have such awards. But according to the European Commission, it is necessary to have one uniform and coherent award for CSR. Secondly, maybe it's not the second one is more important in terms of labor law in a broad sense, but according to the Commission, there is a need for sector-based multi-stakeholder platforms in some highly important economic sectors to make concrete commitments on CSR and jointly monitor the progress of these commitments. So the Commission would like to put in motion this kind of social dialogue in a broad sense and multi-stakeholder social dialogue about CSR proposals. The second goal is not so much about legal stuff, it's about improving and tracking the levels of trust in business. According to this goal, there will be a European-wide survey on citizen trust in business, and there will be a public debate launching this year about the role of business in general in society. So it's rather communicational and programmatic things, but still important. However, the third goal is very important in terms of legal thinking, because it's about improving the quality of self and co-regulation processes. As I said before, CSR is full with different kind of self and co-regulation schemes of multinationals, business associations, and things like that. And the legitimacy and the power of these self-regulatory initiatives often can be questioned, at least. And that's why the European Union decided to draft a kind of protocol, to draft a kind of European code of good practice to guide the further development of self and co-regulations initiatives in the field of CSR. So in my opinion, this is one of the most important points of the new communication, because the Commission would like to channel somehow these self-regulatory schemes in a coherent direction. Of course, we still don't know how this code of practice or protocol will look like and how concrete it will be, but it's still promising, but we will see the final results in the long run. The fourth important goal is enhancing the market reward for CSR. This is also very much about legal improvement, because the EU is planning the adapting and the leveraging of EU policies in the fields of consumption, investment and public procurement in order to promote the market reward for socially responsible business conduct. So as I have already said before, the revision of the public procurement directives is under work in the European Union, so it will offer, according to the current plans, even more possibility for state agencies, public organizations to include social, labor-related and environmental-related clauses into public procurement and state aid and in the broader sense when we are spending government or state money, it can be conditioned on CSR criteria. We also see that the Unfair Commercial Practices Directive is also under revision. It is also very important because we already have, I'm not an expert in, of course, in consumer protection law, but in consumer protection law we have a very important stipulation for labor law as well, because the self-regulatory codes of multinationals, for example, a code of good practice, if a company breaches this code of good practice, it can be an instance of misleading advertisement. So we can sanction already now the breaching of a code of conduct, some kind of labor law infringement. We can sanction this kind of infringement with a sanction not from labor law but from consumer protection law, because this is a very clear and obvious example of misleading advertisement. If a company pledges, for example, that I am not using, for example, child labor in my supply chain, but if it turns out that the company is still using child labor in the supply chain, it can be sanctioned not by the way of labor law but by the way of consumer protection law. So this is also a very important new area of thinking also in labor law. Okay, the fifth is also very important in legal terms, to improve company disclosure of environmental, social and governance information. As I said before, this is the most concrete point now, because a new legislative proposal will come out from the Commission very soon about integrated and mandatory social reporting for corporations. So it's a very interesting new area. And it's a combination of company law, social law, labor law, so it's a cross-cutting area and a multidisciplinary area of legal thinking. So it's a very stimulating also theoretically and of course also in practice. Okay, and the last 3 points very quickly. There is a need to integrate CSI into education, training and research. And in the coming years, the European Union will spend much more money to support CSR training, education and research. Is very obvious. Here we have a very famous institute in Europe, the European Academy of Business and Society, which is a leading school think tank in terms of CSR research. The seventh element is to emphasize the importance of national and subnational CSR policies. It is also very important because we have 27 member states of the European Union, but according to the current research, only in 10 European member states we do have national CSR policies. As far as I know, in Germany you have a national CSR forum from 2009, for example, and in Spain and in other countries we have some kind of concrete national initiatives in terms of CSR, but for example in my country we have almost nothing. And according to the current strategy, EU member states will be obliged, of course obliged by soft law, so not legally speaking, so it's softer than the open method of coordination, but still a kind of prescription, that member states are obliged to update their own plans for the promotion of CSR, and the next year a peer review mechanism will be worked out on the EU level to compare the national CSR strategies and to enhance mutual learning among member states. And finally, the last point, according to the European Union, there is a need for better aligning European and global approaches to CSR. So as I said before, the European Union is very strongly referring back to the European, to the international regulatory attempts of CSR, and in that framework, the most important one is the new UN guiding principles about business and human rights, and the European Union has some very clear and very concrete proposals in this field. For example, according to the plans, of course, all of these are only plans now, but very concrete plans. The EU is planning to work out a monitoring mechanism for big multinationals, how they are, the European multinationals, how they are complying with the United Nations guiding principles, and for SMEs, small and medium-sized enterprises, and for some economic sectors, highly important economic sectors, the European Union would like to work out a concrete, detailed guidance how to follow the UN guiding principles in terms of CSR. And surely there is a need for national action plans. So every member state, according to the current plans, has to prepare a national action plan how to comply with the UN guiding principles. So for me, what is the most important here, you can see that these soft law instruments, by way of this policy making, are becoming somehow a little bit harder. Of course, they are still not real law, but they are becoming a little bit harder. And to finish my speech, I would like to sum up that now we have this new EU strategy, and in 2014 a report will be published about the concrete achievements. And if I would have to sum up the importance of this new strategy, I could say that this is the very first time in public policy, in general in public policy, either in national, international, EU level, to have so concrete proposals for this voluntary concept of CSR. This is the first point. Second is that we can ascertain a very clear move from soft law towards hard law. And last but not least, we can also say that it is unprecedented in the field of CSR to have so concrete legal proposals for CSR. So all in all, we may still have doubts about the value, the legal value of CSR in general, but this new strategy in that sense is still very promising, and it brings new ideas into the field of CSR. So thank you very much for your attention, and of course if you have questions.